Hello and welcome to Saver, production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, and today we're talking about cider.
Yes.
Yes.
Because fall is finally happening in Atlanta.
It is. The temperature's dropped below 80 degrees.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've said, it's our favorite season. Halloween's our favorite mm-hmm. holiday. And one of the things that screams fall to me is a cup of warm cider with booze in it while you're outside telling scary stories in the fall.
Ah.
Yes.
And by cider, you mean like unfiltered apple juice.
Yes.
Okay.
Because we have some confusion around the term cider here in the United States. So before you write in, I also like the crisp, bubbly kind that I think most people outside of the U.S., when they think of cider, that's what it is. That's what it means.
Right.
Mostly what we're going to be talking about today.
Yes, yes. And I do love both of these kinds of cider.
Yes.
For hard ciders, I like the super dry ones. Speaking of that, I guess the hot cider that you're talking about, the warmed juice mixed with booze is also one of my favorite things, but I can have like half of one every year because they have so much sugar.
Yeah.
And sugar plus booze is not my friend.
I pretty much just kick off fall with it, and that's one and done. And I feel like until, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but I feel like until maybe 5 years ago, at least in my experience, there was kind of just one type of hard cider in the U.S., and it was very sweet, and I wasn't a fan of it.
Yeah.
But now, recently, there has been
a beautiful explosion.
Yes, of a lot more different types, which I am also a fan of the dry cider. So,
yeah.
Very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But that brings us to our question. Cider. What is it?
Well, yes, what we're talking about today is mostly not that first thing that Annie mentioned, which is what Americans call cider and consists of unfiltered apple juice, which has some apple pulp and stuff in it, but is not alcoholic. To explain the difference between apple juice and apple cider, one Will Fulton, writing for Thrillist, pointed me toward an old episode of The Simpsons for a basic rundown. So in the episode, The Simpsons are at this cidery, and Homer is bored out of his mind. And all of a sudden, the Flanders come in wearing giant apple hats.
Uh-huh.
And Ned reveals that he has a yearly membership, which he says pays for itself within 16 visits. And Ned's quote on how to tell the difference between apple cider and apple juice is,
"If it's clear and yellow, you've got juice there, fella. If it's tangy and brown, you're in cider town. Now, there's two exceptions."
Very to the point.
It is.
Memorable.
Yeah.
Good Ned Flanders impression.
Oh, thank. It's really just,
it's all in this gesture of like happy waving that she's doing,
which,
right? You can't see.
Which works so well over an audio medium. But yes, so thanks Ned Flanders. That pretty much covers it. But the cider that we're talking about today is mostly what Americans and some Canadians call hard cider, which is what happens when you use yeast to ferment fruit juice, often apple juice, into a lightly alcoholic and carbonated beverage. The yeast eat the sugars in the juice and they excrete carbon dioxide and flavors and alcohol. Yeast poop.
The word cider is thought to derive from ancient Hebrew, meaning strong drink, and that word itself probably derived from ancient Babylonian.
Some English-speaking places will spell cider with a Y, C-Y-D-E-R, if they mean the non-fermented, unfiltered apple juice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And here in the States, we also have products called sparkling ciders that are carbonated but are non-alcoholic and are sold in champagne-style bottles, just to add to the confusion.
That is very confusing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, hard apple ciders are the most common and traditional, but these days other fruit or combinations like apple-pear are popular. Cider that's made from pears is more properly called perry, though. And I will note that there's some serious shade thrown at products incorporating ingredients other than apples and maybe pears in the cider industry. From a UK cider enthusiast, one Andrew Lee, or Leia, maybe, quote, Cider is made only from apples, with a possible admixture of pears. Other so-called ciders, which are made or flavored with other fruits and herbs, are not ciders at all. At best, they are fruit wines, known legally as made wines, and at worst, they are alco pops for indiscriminating and generally young drinkers.
Whoa!
Wow. Shade.
Strong opinion.
I know. But yes, there are just a lot of styles of alcoholic cider, ranging from like 3 to 7% alcohol by volume, typically, but ranging higher. They can be made from fresh pressed juice or from juice concentrate. That juice might be filtered or unfiltered, or the booze might be filtered later, or it might never be filtered. It could be with or without added sugars and other flavorings. They can be fermented entirely in tanks and barrels and then bottled, or partially fermented that way and then completed in the bottle the way you would with champagne via the Bethel Champenois. And chemistry note in the making of ciders. So cider makers have to balance acids and sugars and tannins carefully to taste, just the way that winemakers do. The tannins often come from incorporating blends of apple juices from different varieties of apples. Most tannins are found in wild or crab apples. And so that's tannins. On the acid side, the main acid compound in apples is malic acid. And makers who want to curb, it's got this really like green apple tart flavor. And so some makers want to curb that, so they might encourage the growth of lactic acid bacteria in their brews to decrease that malic acid and round out the flavor. That's called malolactic fermentation. Lactic acid bacteria will eat the sugars and the malic acid and excrete carbon dioxide and lactic acid. Which brings us to bacteria poop! Oh, I love it when it's both. this can create like smooth or buttery flavors in cider, the same way that lactic acid do in Chardonnay, that some brewers want and some don't. Yeah. Meanwhile, on the sugar side, brewers who want to create sweeter ciders sometimes these days add artificial sweeteners like sucralose after fermentation is complete, because adding actual sugar at the end there could kick off another round of fermentation, which you don't want. If you've ever noticed like a sort of weird artificial aftertaste to a sweeter cider, that might be where it comes from.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at any rate,
yes,
the result of all this might be anywhere from sweet to tart to dry to juicy to funky, probably somewhere in between, with a little or a lot of bubble, and any color from nearly clear to yellow to amber to a beer-like brown.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I wanted to say another product with cider in the name that we're not talking about today is apple cider vinegar. Which is what you get when you ferment apple juice all the way to the vinegar stage, like right past the alcohol stage. Zoom.
Yeah, zoom right by it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. That is a whole other episode.
Oh, definitely.
Oof.
We were talking about it before we started.
Yes.
A lot to say there.
Yes.
What about some nutrition?
Drink responsibly.
Yep.
Yeah. But hard ciders are fairly similar to beers nutrition-wise. Of course, individual products from both categories vary real greatly, but ciders often contain a handful more calories and carbs than beers do, and most or all of a cider's carbohydrates will be sugars. Though, because apples contain a bunch of antioxidants, ciders can too.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that that's a reason to start drinking alcoholic cider.
Sure.
But, you know.
It's a thing.
It's in there. That's fun.
Yeah.
Apple cider numbers.
Numbers. We do have some numbers. Mm-hmm. After all but disappearing, cider is making a comeback here in the United States, as we mentioned. From 2013 to 2015, sales of cider jumped by 75%.
What?
In the American market.
Oof.
In 2014, that came out to $366 million.
Wow. And it kept growing. By 2018, it was $510 million, with the industry employing over 1,000 workers here in the U.S. alone.
Wow.
Globally, the industry was valued at about $1.1 billion as of 2016, so a little bit earlier, and at that point was expected to grow to $1.6 billion by 2023. Europe accounted for over half of that market, but the North American market was the fastest growing.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. The rise of gluten-free products has boosted cider sales. Most of them are gluten-free.
Mm-hmm.
And there are cider festivals. One called Pour the Core happens yearly in Philly and Long Island and includes a cider donut eating contest.
Ooh.
Cider donuts, other whole separate episode.
Yes.
And a lot of the – apparently it's a good place to get a pretzel on a string to wear around your neck to eat.
Oh, yeah.
Pretzel necklaces. Yeah.
Oh, I'm a big fan of those.
Oh, yeah. See our pretzel episode for more on those.
Yes.
And they have a list of over 140 hard ciders to sample at these events.
Wow.
I love it.
Yeah.
Around the world, there's a whole lot of these things and a lot of good puns. I think my favorite that I saw was for one festival outside of Bristol every year called the Outsider Festival.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which seems, I like really want to go like to this random festival that I clicked through from an internet page. They call themselves an old school, no-nonsense weekend of fantastic live music, cider, and madness. No tribute bands, no X Factor, no Carling Lager, no tossers.
Old school, no-nonsense madness.
I know. I'm like, whoever these humans are, I want to hang out with them.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
It does. The country with the highest per capita consumption is England, and the world's largest cider-producing companies are there.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a couple of cideries in Atlanta now.
We do.
We do. And I do feel like that's been pretty recent.
Yeah,
most
absolutely.
Of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's about where we are. But how did we get here?
We're going to find out. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with a disclaimer. Not an Apple episode.
Nope.
One day, we touched on some Apple history in our Apple Pie episode.
Uh-huh.
It's just going to be a massive undertaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm unprepared. But yes.
We do have like a brief, you know.
Brief rundown.
Right. As far back as 1300 BCE, apple trees grew along the Nile River in ancient Egypt. And though there are no records of them making cider specifically from these apples, we know that the ancient Egyptians were super into fermenting things
mm-hmm.
and super into beer, so it's not outside the realm of possibility that they brewed up some kind of cider.
Mm-hmm.
Apple trees themselves most likely originated in Kazakhstan, and one way or another, those trees made it to Asia and Europe.
Yeah, by around 1000 BCE, ancient Jews and Greeks and Celts were probably fermenting apple juice.
Whoever discovered that apples could be fermented into cider, once it was discovered, it was quickly adopted.
Mm-hmm.
In 55 BCE, when the first Romans invaded the British Isles, they found and fell in love with a cider-like drink enjoyed by the locals. The Romans took it back with them to their homeland, where it spread within the Roman Empire and throughout all of Europe.
They also brought with them different varieties of apples and an orchard techniques to the Celts in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
By the 3rd century CE, yes, that spread had happened and cider could be found throughout the continent. Our pal Pliny mentioned a drink made from apple juice.
Oh, Pliny.
Mm-hmm.
It was especially cherished among Germanic tribes and also among the Normans, who probably picked up cider making from the Spanish. In fact, the Normans introduced apple orchards and the word cider to England after their 9th century conquest. Folks would use these big circular stones for grinding apples for juice. Since early orchards were a bit of a mix of everything when it came to apples, mm-hmm. before grafting was really a thing, that didn't happen at a large scale until the 1500s of grafting. Farmers never knew what they were going to get. The apples deemed not sweet enough to eat were turned into cider. And we did something like this apple grinding on Old Fashioned Day. Did you have an Old Fashioned Day?
No. What's Old Fashioned Day?
It was a day where you're all old fashioned. You're dressed in a weird outfit. Well, an old timey outfit.
Okay, when you wrote Old Fashioned Day, I was like, is this a day about the cocktail? Did I miss?
Ooh, in elementary school.
And probably not. Now that I understand it's an elementary school thing, probably
yes,
not.
Yes. All I wrote was Old Fashioned Day.
Although we did, I grew up in the eastern part of Ohio, near where a bunch of the Shaker settlements used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we went on a tour of a couple of those a couple times, and they had like historical reenactors doing stuff. And I'm pretty sure that apple presses were involved.
Yeah.
But, oh gosh, it's hard to say.
I feel confident that they were. I feel confident in my interpretation of your memory. they were there. Yeah, my elementary school was really close to LJ, which is a big apple growing area in Georgia. And so we would go visit apple orchards, and there would be cider making demonstrations, although it was not alcoholic cider.
Right,
it
sure.
It was the,
yeah, yes, the juice cider.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
yeah, same thing with the shakers.
Right. That makes sense. I remember Old Fashioned Day because, as I said in our turnip episode, I'm really good at guessing the weight of things. So I usually want a pumpkin every year.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
Yep. And okay. Old Fashioned Day was in September, so the pumpkin always went bad before Halloween.
Oh. Well, nonetheless, like, more pumpkin season is really...
No complaints.
Yeah.
No complaints.
But and one other note before we get back into it. While we were talking about those orchards and grafting, it's important to note that apples are one of those things where the genetic material in the seeds will not necessarily produce the same kind of apple that you're eating. It's important if you want like a standardized crop of apples to employ these grafting techniques. And yeah, they hadn't quite worked them out until like the 1500s at least.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Apples and or other fruits steeped in water left to ferment resulted in a drink enjoyed in the Middle Ages called depens. Early cider makers, unsure of what caused the fermentation process, might throw things in there like dirt or raw meat. Bacon was a favorite.
Okay.
I mean, bacon and apple, I can see that. According to the National Apple Museum, because of its strong, bitter taste, some ciders were called squeal pig ciders because of the sound people made when they drank it.
Oh, gosh.
Ooh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. In some places, cider was used at tithes or to pay rent.
And partially to pay workers. Many farms with enough apple trees had their own cider press, and a ration of cider might be included in like a wage package.
Huh. Mm-hmm. In 1555, Gilles de Gouberville, a Frenchman, wrote in a diary entry about a suggestion from a visitor to heat cider until the alcohol rose up as steam into a copper pot, ready to bottle, or age in an oak barrel. This spirit was bequeathed with the name of the region in Normandy it was from, Calvados. There's even a saying in Normandy, Norman hole, refers to Calvados enjoyed it in the middle of the meal to make a hole in your appetite.
Okay.
To make room for more, essentially.
Sure.
This is also known as apple brandy, or in the U.S., Applejack. More on that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
European monasteries regularly sold cider, and it was popular during the wassail. It was featured in drinking songs like this one. I were brought up on cider, and I be 102. Be still that be nothing when you come to think me father and mother be still in the pink. And they were bought up on cider of the rare old Tavistock brew, and me grandfather drinks quarts, for he's one of the sports. That were brought up on cider, too. Oh, man. It's basically cider. Drinking cider is going to help you live longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cider is referred to in Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. And in 1632, experiments with glassmaking and cider bottling led one Christopher Merritt to submit a paper to the Royal Society in England that would change the way the carbonated beverages worked forever. Thanks to cider. Yeah, it was these innovations that gave rise to champagne being a thing.
Wow.
And other sparkling wines. See our champagne episode for more on that. And it also led to the spread of cider over the next couple hundred years. As with all things boozy, popular folklore considered cider healthy, if not downright medicinal.
Mm-hmm.
In 1664, John Evelyn wrote in his Fruit Fermentation Guide, Pomona, quote, "Generally, all strong and pleasant cider excites and cleanses the stomach, strengthens digestion, and infallibly frees the kidneys and bladder from breeding the gravel stone."
Breeding the gravel stone? That sounds terrible.
Yeah, don't let them do that.
No.
Definitely don't let them do that.
No.
Drink some cider.
By the 1700s, traveling cider makers would take carts to farms with too small of a crop to justify having a cider mill all to themselves. And these carts would set up shop and get to milling and pressing. It was a very short season of work, but I just love the idea of these guys. Like,
yeah.
Traveling cider cart.
Uh-huh. In England, some West Country farms were producing cider commercially as early as 1727. And over the next few decades, some of those ciders were exported to London and beyond and regarded as highly as French wines.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Also in England, cider riots.
What?
Yes, it's another tax-related scuffle regarding a food product in the annals of history. All right, so it was 1763. And England was super in debt due to its involvement in a number of wars, most recently the Seven Years' War. So lawmakers proposed a new tax on cider production.
No.
And those producers were pissed.
Mm-hmm.
First, because taxes, you know. And second, because the law allowed surveyors to search private property without a warrant for cider-making stuff.
Wow.
There were riots. There were tales of surveyors kidnapped and only released if they promised to change professions.
Okay.
It's where we get the phrase, an Englishman's home is his castle. About these warrantless searches, one William Pitt wrote, "The poorest man may in his cottage bid defiance to all the forces of the crown. It may be frail, its roof may shake, the wind may blow through it, the storm may enter, the rain may enter, but the King of England cannot enter. All his force dares not cross the threshold of the ruined tenement."
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Like, heck yeah, dude.
Yeah, I'm feeling passionate for this riot that's over. Long gone. But I'm riled up.
Right? Oh, so, yeah, the law was repealed in 1766.
Successful.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. The first large-scale cider manufacturing operations started opening then in the 1880s, once the Industrial Revolution was in full swing.
By the turn of the 20th century, though, cider was on the decline in Europe due to an agricultural depression and the growing popularity of French wine.
Mm-hmm.
When European colonists began settling in the Americas—
Meanwhile. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They brought with them the cider. In the early days for these settlers, grains and barley for the preferred beverage of beer were not the easiest to grow, especially on the East Coast of the United States, or what would become the United States. But apples were a bit easier, so cider was a readily accepted substitute.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, American apples were smallish and more bitter than what we're familiar with today. They weren't the established named apple varieties from Europe, and that meant that people weren't really keen on eating them, but they were happy to juice them and allow that juice to ferment. As early as 1623, colonists were planting seeds specifically for cider. So yes, early cider was generally alcoholic, and yes, became pretty American before American was really a thing. I saw a lot of, I know we did in our apple pie episode, even though American is an apple pie is a saying, it's not quite true, but it's kind of a similar thing happened here because they weren't the European apples, they were
right.
American apples, and we were drinking a lot of it because we couldn't get the beer that we wanted, so we were drinking a lot of cider. And yeah, remember at this time, boozy drinks were for the most part safer than drinking water. And there was a less boozy version for children called applekin, or in some places I read it was called ciderkin. Hard cider was also sometimes used as currency. According to Mental Floss, barrels of apple cider may have even been used to pay for some of the first roads in the United States.
Huh.
Yeah. On top of this, colonists realized that, yes, if they fermented cider for even longer, they would arrive at that apple cider vinegar that we talked about,
mm-hmm.
Which became very significant as a condiment in the colonies. But perhaps more importantly, they used apple cider vinegar for pickling, which helped them get through harsh winters.
Mm-hmm.
And cider was believed and or promoted as having many health benefits, keeping you warm in the cold, rheumatism prevention, digestive aid, bladder stone prevention, laryngitis, cholera, dysentery, typhoid, colic, and gout, all of those things it could purportedly help you out with. It even supposedly aided in longevity, just like that song suggested.
Ah.
They were not the first.
Huh.
During a lull in one of the first battles of the Revolutionary War, the Battle of Concord on April 19th, 1775, Elias Brown, a man the locals described as eccentric, shall we say, went down enemy lines selling hard cider to both sides.
Ah.
And apparently he made some decent money doing it.
Wow. Oh, gosh.
That's a business. He sees opportunity.
You know?
Accepts the risk.
You have to take your shot.
You can't throw away your shot. Hamilton taught us. After a failed 1755 campaign for Virginia's House of Burgesses, George Washington ran again in 1758. This time, he bought voters 144 gallons of cider. And this was kind of a common practice at the time, handing out
free booze or food or et cetera.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the rest is history. This American president brought to you by cider. At least two other founding fathers wrote of their love of cider, Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin. Franklin said he witnessed a Native American say, after hearing a missionary tell the story of Adam and Eve, "It's indeed bad to eat apples. It's better to turn them all into cider." That's the takeaway of that story, I've long thought.
Sure. Yeah.
He also said, "He that drinks his cider alone, let him catch his horse alone."
Oh. Huh. A parable about don't be greedy. Share that stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I just see the horse running away and I'm confused. It's a different time.
Yeah, it's buy your buddy a drink. It's like a...
another round. I'll get this one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. It's a roundabout way. we say it differently these days. Apparently, President John Adams liked to start each day with a jug of cider. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Washington wasn't the only person who used cider in an electoral campaign.
Oh, I love this.
I do, too. There's so much information about this. It made me very happy. In response to a Richmond editorial reading, quote, "Give him a barrel of hard cider and a pension of $2,000 a year, and he will sit the remainder of his days in his log cabin," 1840 Whig Party presidential candidate William Henry Harrison took those words and made them a part of his campaign, which, if you couldn't tell, it was supposed to be an insult.
Right, yeah.
Yes, so he heard that and was like,
oh. He was like, oh, I see you.
Challenge accepted. He became known as the log cabin and apple cider candidate. Basically, the you can have a beer with him working class argument of its time. People indulged in cider at his rallies. He easily beat his opponent, Martin Van Buren. He went on to give the longest inauguration speech in history and then died a month into his presidency of pneumonia.
Oh.
Some think from the speech because it was raining.
Oh, gosh.
But this is known as one of the biggest backfires in presidential campaign history because they thought it was this big burn and it actually helped him win.
Wow. Huh.
And it gifted us with two well-known additions to our American vocabulary. One, get the ball rolling. After a 10-foot ball bedecked with pro-Harrison slogans and made of tin and paper about 3 meters, it had a handful of Harrison supporters pushing it for hundreds of miles.
What?
Yes.
That is the weirdest campaign. Okay. Well, I mean, sure. I mean, you know, we didn't have, like, the internet. We didn't have buses.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have Netflix. Like, people had to make their own fun.
You make a big 10-foot ball, paper and tin, and just push it for hundreds of miles. It gets a lot of attention.
A lot of attention. I have to imagine it gets dirty.
Yeah, I agree. Probably the slogans got a little rough and tumble after a time.
But okay.
The second word we got, word or phrase, booze.
Really?
Yes, from these whiskey-filled log cabin-shaped bottles provided by the E.C. Booze Distillery. And these were handed out by Harrison supporters.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great.
I know. I want to, like, a log cabin bottle.
Oh, I feel like we saw at least one of those at the Wild Turkey Distillery.
Because
they have
did.
All those very strange, most of them are turkey-shaped, perhaps, obviously.
But, right.
But in their history, they have put out some weird bottles.
I mean, we're suckers for some strange bottles. Apparently helped this guy win the presidency. Maybe the whiskey. But I'm sure the bottle was very memorable.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. The first distillery license in the U.S. was issued in 1780 to New Jersey's Laird & Company Distillery. And, according to the family's records, soon after Alexander Laird arrived to the U.S. from Scotland, he planted apple trees to make cider spirits, a.k.a. Applejack. The story goes, according to them, that when Laird went to serve under George Washington, Laird's family sent Applejack to the troops. And, of course, in their retelling, Washington loved it. No copper still? No problem. Americans figured out a way to make Applejack without using one, instead employing freeze distillation. So during the wintertime, they'd leave a barrel of cider outside at the, so that the water would freeze off, leaving the liquid alcohol.
Ooh.
Yeah, which they would scoop.
Oh, that doesn't always work.
Right. It's not without risk. This whole thing is called jacking, by the way. It can leave behind some toxins that distillation would typically get rid of.
Oh, right, because when you distill something, you get a full run, and within that run, you really only keep a certain amount of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
This gave Applejack a bit of a bad reputation for a while. It was sometimes called Essence of Lockjaw.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
An 1894 article published in the New York Times read, "The victim of Applejack is capable of blowing up a whole town with dynamite and of reciting original poetry to every surviving inhabitant." Original poetry. Oh, well, at least there's a silver lining.
Oh, gosh. That's my favorite burn on drunk people that I've ever heard in my entire life. Like, they're going to burn some stuff down and they're going to recite poetry to the survivors.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, I've had those nights.
We've all been there.
Drink responsibly.
Drink responsibly. For people who didn't want to play around with Applejack but did want a boozier version of cider, they might add a liquor into the cider. So one of the popular renditions was half cider and half rum. It was called Stonewall because it was like running into one. Yeah. There was another one with a very similar name, and I couldn't figure out if they have the same thing or just like a different, very close thing. Yeah. Anyway, like running into a wall. A 1790 survey out of Massachusetts found that every citizen over 15 downed a yearly average of 34 gallons of beer and cider, 5 gallons of distilled spirits, and a gallon of wine. For reference, today, the average American consumes about 4 gallons of alcohol a year total.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything.
Everything.
Times have changed.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of times changing, cider's popularity did take a hit once Eastern European and German immigrants began settling in the Midwestern U.S., where it was easier to grow barley and grain.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought with them their love and knowledge of beer.
Mm-hmm.
Still, before the 20th century, people were drinking a pint of cider a day in apple-growing regions. The Industrial Revolution impacted cider production as well, as more farmers moved to working in factories in cities. Cider, unpasteurized and unfiltered at this time, did not transport well. And beer you can make in the city, it's hard to kind of pick up a whole apple orchard and...
Yeah, more difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Still, 55 million gallons were being produced in 1899. In 1919, that number was 13 million gallons. And that brings us to the biggest blow to American cider. Prohibition.
Ah.
Yes, obviously. Perhaps.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it affected a number of things about American alcohol production.
Definitely did. American cideries almost went extinct during this period. Some hardcore prohibitionist burned apple orchards to prevent the production of cider.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Dudes.
Yeah. And by the time prohibition was overturned, people had pivoted to beer and viewed apples as primarily for eating. Not only that, wine and beer were not subject to the same restrictions post-prohibition that cider was when it came to added preservatives.
Ah.
Yeah, cider wasn't allowed to have any, where it was fine for wine and beer. This seems to be due to attempts by the beer and possibly wine industry or industries to prevent cider from getting back in the game, or at the very least, slow it down.
Huh.
The Volstead Act outlawed alcoholic cider and allowed the production of only an annual 200 gallons of sweet cider per orchard. Also, soft drinks didn't help because they filled the role long held by cider.
In 1976, the UK instated a new cider tax.
No.
No riots this time.
Uh-huh.
I think it's okay.
Okay.
We're getting fine. We're getting through just fine.
Okay, good. Well, there's another thing, speaking of the UK, very funny headline from the Daily Mail in 1998 that I stumbled on. Cobwebs tangle cider maker.
Oh.
Yeah.
What what kind of cobwebs did he get tangled in?
Apparently, it was part of a tourist attraction. He had these big cobwebs in his cider cellar. But this fellow, Roger Wilkins, was told he had the, quote, wrong kind of cobwebs.
Oh.
From the EU. And Mr. Wilkins commented on the whole thing, "This is bureaucracy gone mad." And he had to get rid of the cobwebs.
Oh.
They said he could have newer cobwebs.
Oh. But it wasn't like sanitary or something?
I don't know.
Maybe the spiders involved were like poisonous or something, or venomous. What do spiders get up to? I don't remember.
They weren't safe spiders.
There you go.
I don't know. It sounded like they were just saying, these are old cobwebs.
You need new cobwebs.
You need newer cobwebs.
Nothing but the freshest cobwebs.
Otherwise, get out of town.
Well.
It was a tourist attraction.
Yeah.
In 2015, Congress here in the U.S. passed regulations to bring American cider onto the same page as the rest of the world, increasing the permitted alcohol content and the carbonation, and adding pears as an allowable fruit, which, as we said.
Yeah, it's, you know, pears are maybe okay.
Maybe okay.
Yeah. Yes. If y'all have a stronger opinion about it than I do, I'm only reporting what I've found mm-hmm. on the internet.
Yes. That's the best we can do.
Yes. Oh, and yeah, that pretty much brings us to today-ish. I'd say right around 2006 was the boom, the beginnings of the boom of a resurgence of ciders.
And it's exciting.
And it's a lot, and it is exciting. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that it's a wide option at a lot of the brew pubs that I go to.
Yeah, because I have a lot of friends who don't like beer that mm-hmm. much, but they do really like cider.
Yeah, and whereas the wine selection at a lot of beer and, like, booze-focused mm-hmm. places is kind of not a selection, the yeah. cider selection at those places could be quite robust.
It can be. time to get some cider. But first, we do have a little bit more left.
We do, but first we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
Listener Mail!
I don't know a drinking song. I only know the one from Lord of the Rings. Fake drinking song. Well, you can turn it into
is
a real.
Is it fake?
What does the Dumbledore say? Of course it's all in your head, Harry. But who's to say it's not real? I'm always ready to go. Always ready.
I like how seamlessly you slipped from a Lord of the Rings reference into a Harry Potter reference. Yes. That's good. Yeah.
Yes, I'm available for parties. Very specific type of parties, but I'm available for them. Rebecca wrote, "The reason I'm writing to you is twofold. One, because of the Bitters episode, which is playing in my ear right now. And two, because you two entertain my office.
Aww.
The whole office doesn't listen to the show directly, but I listen and then bring in the crazy and fun food facts I learned through your show. I've been listening since Champagne and love the show."
Oh,
that's awesome. "In between my employment, I got deployed, and my coworker would frequently message me to tell me how much he misses my fun food facts.
Oh.
Now that I'm back, he doesn't work in the same office but another building, and I try to share only the most interesting and crazy facts I hear. Otherwise, I would bore my coworkers to tears." And for the bitters, "I'm a bartender, and the bar I work at is rather posh. It has at least 4 different types of bitters for all of our cocktails. And since I'm not a soda," well, we call it pop here in Ohio, "drinker, and mostly drink water, on the days I want flavor, I'll throw some bitters in a glass of sparkling water to spruce up my beverage. It's lovely, and if you haven't tried it, I do suggest it."
Oh, gosh, that is one of my favorite things to do. I absolutely suggest it as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
I tried it after doing this. I was like, yep.
Yeah.
On board.
It's just refreshing and lovely. It tricks me into hydrating.
Mm-hmm. I'm so happy that since that episode, I found so many new ways to use bitters.
Oh, I haven't put them in my coffee yet.
Oh,
okay.
That's good.
All right. All mm-hmm. right. Mental note. Tara messaged us on Facebook to say, "Hi, ladies. I'm just listening to the food waste episode and wanted to let you know of a pop-up restaurant we had here in London that my company worked with last year at Selfridges. It was called Waste Ed. And each day, there was a well-known or celebrity chef heading the kitchen. All of their food came from grocery stores and other restaurants that were going to throw it out as waste. The food was still fine and safe to be consumed, but for whatever reason, they were going to throw it, or it was waste in terms of unused cuts of meat, fish, etc. So the menu changed each day, and there were no choices. It was a set price and set menu based on the supplies received. It was basically fully booked each night it was open. I just thought you would find that interesting. Oh, indeed.
Yeah.
That's great.
I know. I'd love to check something out like that.
Yeah.
And then Anne on Facebook shared the Onion headline, "New Hellman's theme park to feature world's longest lazy Mayo River." And I didn't realize it was an Onion headline at first. And the drop of, in my heart into my stomach, the nausea.
Oh man.
Lungs. And then I realized, like, no way.
And then you checked.
Yeah, and then I saw the link. It was an Onion link. Ooh.
Longest lazy Mayo River.
Oh, no. Oh, I can feel it in the back of my throat. It's so gross.
No.
Also, I'm really bad at lazy rivers, as Lauren and I discovered when we were in Orlando recently. Apparently, I can't relax. I was just tense the whole time.
Well, there were also, like, surprise, like fountains spurting and stuff like that. Like, it wasn't the laziest of lazy rivers.
No. And at one part, I was going backwards, and I wasn't sure why. So I was having to
paddle. Yeah.
And then I was too embarrassed to get out at the end because I thought I was trapped in the tube. So I went around a second loop. Not good at lazy rivers. It's not in my skill set.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, you can get better. And anything, you're capable of improving any skill with practice.
I love the idea of a montage scene with lazy with,
like,
rivers.
Like the Rocky music in the background.
Yes. But. And I'm like putting on the swim goggles, settling into the tube. I'd watch something like that.
That would be delightful.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
And hearing from these listeners was delightful.
Yes, thank you so much for writing in.
Yes, and if you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram, all at SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thank you, as always, to our super producers, Andrew Howard and Dylan Fagan. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.